The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's BGN Radio episode number 387. I'm Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of Including Green Nation. Going to get into what the Eagles brass discussed at the NFL owners meetings in Orlando, Florida this past week. Nick, Howie, and Jeffrey Lurie all spoke. Jeffrey Lurie, of course, only speaks like once a year, very rarely more than that. We hear from Howie enough, and we certainly hear from Nick enough, but Jeffrey Lurie, once a year thing. So always interesting to hear what he has to say in sort of his quote unquote state of the Eagles address, if you will. But before we get to all that, Brandon, where can I, if I were looking for the finest meat snacks in the land, where should I go?
I think you should go to, as you see on the screen here, if you're watching us on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube page, which, by the way, subscribe, hit the bell notification for notifications for new videos. And also, most importantly, but in addition to those things, leave us a like. And if you're not going to subscribe or anything or do that, which we hate you if you don't, it costs you nothing to just leave a like. Just hit the like button. Anyway, you can go to RighteousFelon.com and use discount code BGN15, as you see here on the screen, to get 15% off the best, highest quality meat snacks in the land. And it is as good of a time as ever to go get some. So once again, discount code BGN15 at RighteousFelon.com. Same discount code works at WildRangerPet.com for 15% off dog treats.
All right. So owners meetings, not a ton to come from that, you know, nothing, you know, overwhelmingly interesting from any of the press conferences, but there was some overlap between, you know, some of the things that Howie and Jeffrey said. And I think the first thing that I kind of want to get to is, and you know, we're sort of creatures of the moment too, so a lot of the talk was about what they did in free agency, of course. Whereas with Jeffrey, we kind of got into a lot of, like, you know, 60,000 foot view stuff, but also he got some questions about, you know, sort of the direction of the team in the short term. And of course, Saquon Barkley came up. And, you know, Howie and Jeffrey, their comments kind of echoed each other. Like, Howie called him a special player. Jeffrey Lurie called him a special player. Howie alluded to the idea that the running back market had become so undervalued that maybe that was something to attack this offseason. Jeffrey Lurie kind of said the same thing. They also both kind of tried to make it seem like they hadn't, like, you know, just avoided paying running backs in the past, or, you know, using, you know, premium resources on running backs in the past. And that's where I'll disagree with them. Like, certainly they have not used premium resources on running backs. Like, come on. They rarely ever take one high. The highest one they've taken in the draft in recent years was Miles Sanders. I think they actually drafted Miles Sanders and LeSean McCoy, if I'm not mistaken, in the same draft slot. They were both in the 50s. I know that, at least. And, you know, they paid Brian Westbrook once upon a time. They paid LeSean McCoy once upon a time. And the other thing they agreed with on, the other thing they agree with in terms, or the other things they kind of brought up unprompted on their own, was that they expect they'll pay running backs if they're also a factor in the run game, or in the pass game, which is what they expect from Saquon Barkley, which they certainly got back in the day from Brian Westbrook, and maybe to a somewhat lesser degree, but he was a factor in the passing game too, and LeSean McCoy. So they think Saquon can be a factor in the passing game, you know, not just as a receiver, but also in pass protection. You can keep him on the field for all three downs. You can keep him on the field in any situation. And, you know, he's a guy that is going to be able to break more tackles for you also on the early downs. I think one of the areas where they struggled last year was in their 4-minute offense, where they weren't able to kind of just put teams away. Two examples being the Seahawks game, the Cardinals game. Could have put those two games away in the 4-minute offense, just couldn't, and then gave those teams a chance to win it, and they did. So, and that's something they didn't do a lot of in 2021 and 2022 when they were able to put teams away. They weren't able to do that at the end of the year last year. So I think Saquon is a guy they believe can be a high-impact player for them. And, you know, I think they're kind of right on the point where the running back market became so devalued league-wide. I mean, certainly there's some teams that did throw big resources at running. Like Falcons took Bijan Robinson 8th overall last year. The Lions took Jahmyr Gibbs in the early teens. I want to say they were like 14th, 15th, something like that overall in last year's draft, somewhere in that area anyway. So it's not like every team in the league is kind of operating that way, but I do think that certainly in free agency last year, we saw running backs get nothing. And then this year there was, I think, other teams around the league kind of maybe felt the same way as the Eagles, because it was crazy. Like the first day or two of free agency, running backs, boom, 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 like one after the next going off the board earlier than a lot of more premium positions, like cornerback, for example. Those guys didn't start coming off the board until much later. So, teams around the league with the really good running backs have success offensively, partly because of when you talk about like one of the best running backs in the league, like Christian McCaffrey, you know, it's kind of a hard to match that level of player. But, you know, certainly teams have had success with the run game this year, and some of them, you know, had deep playoff runs. So I kind of get it. And I've kind of been a big fan of the Saquon Barkley signing all along, you less so. I'm just curious what you thought about their comments about Saquon.
I don't think the thought process there is as objectionable to me as I just wonder if Saquon is truly the player that people think he is. I think the idea of Saquon is a little bit better than the reality of him. And I know, you know, again, don't need to relitigate the whole thing, because we kind of covered this in our last podcast when we did the free agency review, but I know he's going to benefit from being here as opposed to the Giants and everything. But I do think there's a little bit of overrating going on, and people use that word, or that feels like a dirty word to use sometimes, because I think it becomes like synonymous with this player sucks. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be an amazing player, but if you could be the best player on a team, but if someone says you're a Hall of Famer and you're not, well, then you're overrated. Like, that's like how the term overrated used. Like, you're being made out to be something you're not. And I think, you know, Saquon is still a good player for sure, but they're paying him like an elite level running back, and I don't know that he's quite that anymore. The logic is fine. I did like hearing from Saquon on the New Heights show, you know, obviously with Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce.
I hadn't listened to that yet. How was he on that?
Pretty good. You can see how, I think it's a little funny how gun shy he is when it comes to like saying anything that can be even perceived as like a slight to the Giants. And I get it. You don't want to necessarily insert yourself in that kind of stuff potentially, but it's also like, I don't know. You can't just say everything is taken out of context. Like, sometimes you say something and it's a slight against the Giants or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's just a slight. Because, you know, players like to do that in general. They're like, oh, I just got taken out of context. It's like, you didn't get taken out of context. You just didn't like the reaction to what it is that you said. You didn't like the reaction. Any case. So it's a little rabbit ears kind of thing going on with him. But for the most part, I thought that was good. It is kind of funny to think about how different the Eagles running back outlook is compared to last year, just in terms of like, even in training camp, we didn't know who was going to get the most carries for this team.
Right.
You know, there was, and even in the last offseason, we thought Rashad Penny was going to play a big role, or a role. He played none. Yeah. Basically, right, all year. So it is kind of different, and I think it's different than the Eagles have been in a long time in terms of how they're going to operate with Saquon. I mean, I think you mentioned that he got compared to the A.J. Brown thing, where he's going to be a focal point of the offense. He's going to be he's going to be the Eagles haven't had really like a 20 touch running back per game kind of guy in a long time. I think he's going to be that kind of guy. That's what you're paying him for. That's why you're bringing him in here. That's what he profiles to be. I'm sure Kenny Gainwell will mix in, you know, because the coaching staff loves him way too much. Mm-hmm. As Nick Sirianni talked about. Oh, he didn't say that, but he talked him up a little bit when he asked about the running back room there. So I'm sure, you know, Kenny Gainwell's still going to have a role. Everyone likes to make the joke that they're going to bring in Kenny Gainwell in the red zone and take Saquon out after, like, Saquon has an awesome run or an awesome drive. Everyone, like, likes to do that, which not totally unfair, I think, for people to question the usage of these players. But, yeah, I mean, it's obvious that Saquon's going to be a big part of this team, big part of this offense, but I think their comments really hit that or drove that point home.
You know, you mentioned the Giants part about Saquon being apprehensive about saying anything that could be construed negatively. Jeffrey Lurie, not as much. I don't know if he caught this during his press conference. He didn't mean it. I'm sure he did not mean to slight the Giants. He was probably just talking up his own team and the players on you know, his own offense. But he's like, yeah, Saquon comes here and he gets to play with a better quarterback, better skill position players, better offensive line. They're basically just crapping all over the Giants, you know, crappy offense that they've had over the last half decade or whatever, 6 years, I think, however long Saquon's been there. And so I thought that was very funny that he did that. On the Kenny Gainwell note, I also thought it was funny that like during the Nick presser, he was talking about how tough a player Kenny is. And then he kind of tried to give an example. They didn't really sell very well. He was just like, against the Rams, he had, like, I guess in pass protection, like his you know, part of the game plan was for him to always have eyes on Aaron Donald, make sure that he didn't, you know, wreck the game or anything like that. If he got through the line or whatever. And he's like, in that game, he had a chip on the edge. It wasn't even down. I don't even think he was ever talking about Aaron Donald. He had a chip on the edge. And then he caught a pass in the flat. And then that was it.
I need to look up that stat. I totally forgot to look up the stat. What was that, like a catch for no gain?
And that was it. That was the end of that anecdote. He chipped a guy and then he went out to the flat and caught a pass. And that was the end of the example of how tough he is. But you're right. You know, I think Kenny Gainwell will still play some kind of role. I don't know what they'll do in terms of, you know, bringing back Boston Scott or not. He's still on the open market, or if they just go in a different direction. I wonder how much the new kickoff rules will play into, you know, who they sign or whether they bring back Boston Scott or whatever. I haven't really wrapped my head around that whole thing yet, but Saquon Barkley, they believe in highly. They obviously think he's they both use the word special. So like you said, he's going to be a guy, and I think Howie even said, like, if you get a guy that's going to, you know, potentially touch the ball 300 times in a season, that guy's going to have a big impact on your team, you know, either positive, negatively, sure, whatever. If you have a guy, and he said, you know, hopefully touch the ball 300 times in a season.
Well, right. That's part of the issue the worry.
Right. Whether he can stay healthy and durable or whatever, and whether you get leads and stuff like that, and you want to give the ball to your back quite a bit. But it's kind of right. Like, would I take a Bijan Robinson 8th overall, 10th overall? Hell no, because they just have such short shelf lives. But if you're just spending a little bit of extra money on a running back that you think can be, you know, big factor for you over the course of 3 years, and we'll see how long, you know, he remains an effective player. He's 27, which is young in NFL years, but older in terms of NFL running back years. So we'll see, you know, what he can be in 2025 and 2026. But paying a guy like mid-level, it's not even a ton of money. Like, it's what, $12 million a year, which isn't crazy money compared to, you know, some other guy. You might sign a safety at $12 million and not, you know, blink twice at it. In theory, you know, you're not in theory, but your running back is probably going to affect games a hell of a lot more than a safety will. And it's not the same as, like, you know, paying the Rams playing Todd Gurley, for example, like 14 or 15 million a year when they did it. But when they did it, it was 2018, when the salary cap was 80 million less than it is. So like the percentage of the cap that was going to him was probably closer to like, you know, like 9-10%, you know, 8-10% somewhere in there, whereas, you know, Saquon's going to account for like 5 on this Eagles team. So I don't think it's a crazy contract by any stretch. And, you know, if he plays at a special level, he'll be more than worth it. If he doesn't, then probably not worth it. Hashtag analysis. But yeah, I do think they now have the other thing I should note too, by the way, really not that many good running backs in the league right now. How many are there?
That is true. I was talking to someone, my good friend Holden, because I, you know, he knows I don't like love the Saquon thing. And he's like, because I said like, and I even said here earlier, I just don't think, I don't know if he's an elite back anymore. And he's like, well, who is? And I'm like how many running backs would you have over Saquon? And I'm like, it's a fair point. I would say like Nick Chubb. I would say
Christian McCaffrey,
goes without saying. I'd have to look through like specifically. Mm-hmm. I'm not also just like, you know, rattling these names off the top of my head, but to a larger point, the fact that I can't like come up with like, you know, 10 off the bat kind of is a fair point.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift was 5th in the NFL in rushing last year. Mm. So, you know,
it was kind of like a down year, though, I feel like, right? Like, kind of for running backs in general. Like, in general, obviously not CMC aside. It was
He barely got over 1,000 yards. And then even Miles Sanders, I think, was like, he was in the top 5 at least last year. I think he had, 1,200 something yards?
You mean the year before?
Right. Not this past year, but in 2022 with the Eagles. He had, 1,200 something yards, I believe. I think he was top 5 in the NFL. DeAndre Swift, top 5 this year. So, you know, like Saquon Barkley's for sure better than Miles Sanders, and in my opinion, for sure better than DeAndre Swift as well. So, I don't know. We'll see. I think it adds a new element. And like I said during one of the last podcasts, taking a quote sort of from our good friend Bounty Bowl Gabe, the Eagles are like, for fans, like the Eagles are their favorite TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Saquon Barkley also just makes the team more fun to watch.
Yeah, I think that could be true. The Gainwell reception was for 7 yards, by the way.
That was
the dynamic.
But along the way, he choke slammed a guy, he suplexed a guy, and he drop kicked the guy, and then that's when he went down.
I think it was Chris Clemens who choke slammed Tavares Jackson. You remember? Yeah, that was an awesome.
Asante Samuel pick six against the Vikings.
That was an awesome.
The Vikings. Yeah.
Awesome. That's an awesome wrestling move. It's great. An all time wrestling move. Great move. The chokes. It's so fake. Like, you can't grab someone by their throat and pick them up.
Yeah. And you can see the guy that's getting choked on. You can see him like dip down and just jump as high as he can.
But it looks so cool. And it's so fun. It's such a fun, to me, it's always a fun move. WrestleMania 40 coming up in Philly here very soon. I think next weekend. So. Interested to see. I bet you there's an Eagles angle to that. I bet you there's like, you know, Lane Johnson is there. You know what I mean? Or Jason Kelsey is there. Like, I bet you there's an Eagle at least like in attendance in the front row or something. And I wouldn't be shocked if they like mix one in.
They run into the ring and they jack someone up.
Right. Or yeah, something like that. Yeah. I bet you there's some kind of like Eagles because it's in Philly. I bet you there is. I bet you there's some kind of Eagles tie-in at some level. Or they, you know, he's like Lane Johnson standing next to some wrestler while they're cutting a promo or, you know, or something. I bet you there's some kind of inclusion like that. Anyway, something to watch out for if you care. What else we got, Jimmy?
Next thing. I think this was really interesting, actually. This is a really interesting thing that I think came out of the owners' meetings in an otherwise kind of trio of press conferences, but Howie was asked about the additions of CJ GJ and Devin White, more specifically on the angle in which, you know, they're looking for more swagger and more like toughness to add to the defense. And he was asked if, you know, that was partly what they were looking for in terms of adding players to the defense. And he said, yeah, like he basically acknowledged that. Yeah, they were. And I'll read the quote. He said, obviously, we want talent with those guys, but I think that's accurate to say, because the question was about that. We were looking to regain our swagger mentality back. And obviously, what happened at the end of the year didn't feel good and wasn't really acceptable for any of us. And so we wanted to get players who can kind of bring that and have that motivation and mentality. Now, for me, I look back at that 49ers game where before that game happened, they're doing their DB drills. I saw this coming, so I started taking video of it. I could see something brewing, so I started taking video of it. And the 49ers just walked right through their defensive backs drill. And they didn't do a damn thing about it. Nothing. They just let it happen. Just kind of, they looked, I mean, they were intimidated, I think, by the 49ers when they came into Philly this year. And they got their asses kicked on the field, and they got embarrassed, in my opinion, before the game started when that happened. CJGJ's in that defensive back line. No way there's not a fight before that game starts. And then Devin White, I didn't really know him to be that kind of player, because I mean, I've seen him play quite a bit, and I know like what he is as a player. Like, he's fast and he runs around and he's, you know, kind of an undersized guy or whatever. And you know, he's feisty or whatever, but I didn't know him to be sort of like a swagger, tone setter kind of guy, but I guess he is, cause he was part of that example as well. But yeah, it is interesting that they acknowledged, first of all, that they needed to improve in that area, that they needed those kinds of guys back in their defense, and they did something about it. So I found that very interesting that they felt that it's easy for us and anyone else to see that that defense had no swagger whatsoever. Like, guys not celebrating sacks together, guys not celebrating any kind of plays or anything like that together. It was just a weird vibe by that defense where they're just kind of going play by play. Even when they were playing okay at times, you just kind of didn't see the exuberance that you saw out of that unit in 2022. So they wanted to get back to that, obviously, but it is interesting that they felt that way as well and wanted to change it.
Well, an offense too, really. Not that, you know, the signing those guys helps the offense, but just as a whole team kind of point. And I think something that you would like to see more, you know, when Jalen Hurts has been talked about in that regard, like, it's like, look like you're having fun. Like, especially when we've seen examples of Eagles teams in the past that did do that. Obviously the 2017 team coming to mind with all their celebrations, like, it might sound a little silly. And it's not as simple as like, well, hey, if the Eagles celebrate more on their touchdowns and they get into a pregame fight, like, do they beat the 49ers if CJGJ is there and starts a pregame fight? Like, no, I don't think so. Because that's not the reason they lost the game, but
right.
I get to a point of, swagger and mentality is certainly part of it. And there's, I think, something to be said for how I was thinking about, look at the teams that CJGJ has been on throughout his career, or at least the defenses he's been on. And even the Lions last year, like, there's been good vibes on those teams. And now look, I think it could go the other way too, where you add CJGJ to like a kind of a volatile environment, and that might not be the best thing necessarily. I don't think that's always just, I don't think swagger and all of that is like unchecked is always good, no matter what, always a positive. It's a tool, I think, in the toolbox that when used in the right way can really be important and effective. And you know, I don't think you want to build a defense entirely out of people like-minded of CJGJ. That might be a little right. too much. But having some of those guys in the mix, I think, is certainly a formula for success. And so, to me, it's not the most important thing about that signing. You know, the most important thing about that signing to me is like his versatility and the fact that he has playmaking ability. Like, I value those things more ultimately. But is that part of the package, which I think matters? Yeah, I think it does. And I think it's good for them to admit that. And maybe to a point, they were missing some of that in the slide last year. They were missing some kind of. It just felt like things became toothless, right? Like, as they started to continue to slide, especially by the point of like the Giants game, which was just so pathetic. Maybe if you have a guy who's a little bit more fired up, that helps.
Yeah. All right. Next thing.
Well, let's take a break here, Jim.
Okay.
And we'll get into our next thing. So we'll take a break right now and we'll be back.
After
this.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Back here on PGN Radio, which, in addition to Righteous Felon Craft Turkey, is also brought to you by Wrong Crowd Beer Company. Jimmy, our good friends at Wrong Crowd Beer Company, who you should follow, by the way, on Instagram, because they post, you know, new cans and releases and promos and whatnot, a lot of different things going on. So you can follow them at Wrong Crowd Beer on Instagram. They have a new beer here that I'm going to show you from my phone. It's called Center of Our Hearts. You can see the image there. I'm just going to say that and leave it there. They describe it as a dark, fruity, and irresistible.
He's wearing the number 62, but it's not necessarily anyone specific.
That could be anyone. That could be any person. It's a black IPA. It is brewed with dark roasted malt and New Zilla hops from New Zealand. It's a 7.9 ABV roller coaster of citrus, tropical, and stone fruit aromas.
That sounds like right up my alley, actually.
Yeah, it actually sounds really good. And our shout out to our good friend Dan, who I think is going to drop some of those off soon. So we'll be having those. We'll let you know how they are. But if you want to get in on it ahead of us, potentially, check out Wrong Crowd Beer, especially if you're 21 plus. They're based in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And you can check out their website at wrongcrowdbeer.com.
What'd you say, 7.9?
Yeah, it's a 7.9. So it's a little on the heavier side.
Yeah. Okay.
Enjoy responsibly.
All right. Next thing. So, obviously, Jeffrey Lurie got asked plenty about Nick Sirianni, the decision to retain him, the process that went into deciding how he came to that decision, expectations for him going forward, et cetera, et cetera. And he kind of did what you thought he would do, which was, kind of point to, the idea that, not the idea, but the fact that they went to the playoffs in each of his first 3 years. He actually even kind of cherry picked a certain.
Yeah, I love this.
A certain endpoint.
Oh, we were 31-7.
31-7. Okay. Which was, I guess, a time frame between some point in 2021 where.
Like when they started to turn it around.
They're probably like 2-7. No, 2-5 at that point, I guess.
Shane Steichen takes over the play calling.
Yeah. And then, of course, the 2022 season is what it was, where they were just romping through everyone. And then. The first
they're the kings of like taking a legitimately good stretch like in 2022 and then fixing other parts onto that
to take credit
for more things. Then I hate it so much.
Yeah, so he cherry picked a very specific timeline of, and he came up with the Eagles had a record of 31-7 during that stretch, which certainly 31-7 is amazing to have, to win 31 games in a span of 31 games and it's in a span of 38 games. It's very good. But it's also very cherry picked, and to be fair, he absolutely acknowledged how bad the stretch was at the end of the season. And I remember like watching, seeing his reactions during the games where he looked pissed, and then even after the playoff game against the Bucks, I saw him coming through the tunnel. And into the locker room, and he looked pissed then too. Mm-hmm. So he's an owner who cares a lot. He's he hammered that home on Tuesday when he talked that he cares a lot, and he does. Like certainly he cares a lot about the success of the team. I think probably more so than most of the owners in the NFL, right up there at the top of the league in my opinion in terms of owners that definitively want to win, which isn't the case with every owner, and. Ultimately, what he arrived at with Nick was that he had a lot of success with him. When Nick came in with Howie and pitched what their plan was going forward, he bought what he was selling. Need to bring in the best possible offensive coordinator. He said, Lurie said that Nick's first choice was Kellen Moore.
Wow, how convenient. His first choice is the same guy the Eagles wanted to hire as their offensive coordinator when Doug Peterson was still the head coach.
Right, and who they brought in for head coaching
interviews before they hired Nick Sirianni. What a coincidence.
So that's what he said. He said it was Nick's first choice was Kellen Moore, and then of course Vic Fangio had been. I mean, he credited Nick for Vic Fangio, but come on, we know that they've been wanting Vic Fangio for a very long time now. Let's not put that on Nick. But the thing that I thought that stood out just in terms of their, meetings before, and he certainly acknowledged that there was there was a decision to make. Like it wasn't just, of course, we're bringing him back because of the 3 years that he had so far in Philly. He acknowledged that there was a decision to make, but he ultimately brought him back. And that the, you know, because of his record and whatever. But I think the one thing that stood out to me was that Nick didn't make any excuses to him. Yeah. Took accountability for, you know, what happened at the end of that season, of course. So I don't know. There's a whole lot to take away from that. Elliot mm-hmm. asked if Nick was on the hot seat heading into the season. And, you know, certainly if he had been asked that a year ago, it would have been like, what? Like, seriously? GTFOH, dude. But after the season they just had and the decision whether to retain him or not, of course he's on the hot seat. Of course he is. And his answer reflected that. He was basically like, well, every head coach in the NFL has all kinds of pressure on them to perform. So, you know, basically with that answer, he was confirming that, yeah, Nick Sirianni is, you know, very, very much squarely on the hot seat heading into 2024. And if he doesn't perform, he's probably going to be replaced by somebody either already on the staff or outside of it.
So I've been having some big picture thoughts about the Eagles, which I think I'll use this, what we're talking about, as a jumping off point for that. And I feel like I'm of two minds, as I often am, more than one thing can be true. But I think like I've been feeling like, okay, I was pretty down at the end of last year. Obviously, I thought things were bad. I thought they should have fired Sirianni. But my pessimism wasn't so much about carrying into 2024. I've never thought like, oh, they can't rebound. I think a lot of things point to them rebounding in that I still believe in the talent. I still think you have a lot of good talent there. I like the coordinator hires. They have won with Sirianni before. The Cowboys are not just so primed to easily repeat, considering no one repeats as division winners, and they haven't even done any. They've only gotten worse this offseason so far. So in a lot of ways, I feel kind of like almost bullish on the Eagles, but I think it's only to a point. I think I'm bullish on them like winning the division, being a good team, rebounding a bit from last year.
Side note, Dallas has had a rough offseason so far.
For sure. I think it comes to a point where, and you know, I talk about all the time how Sirianni like wouldn't go for it in the Super Bowl. And I think I don't think Sirianni's flaws are enough to prevent the team from having a good year, like being better or whatever in 2024. But I do think they ultimately will hold the team back from achieving the whole, like the biggest goal of them all. And he's not going to give them an edge in that regard. And I think that's a big issue. And if you're another team rooting against the Eagles, is exactly kind of where you want them to be, in a spot where they're good, but not quite good enough. So that's my biggest fear, is that they kind of are going to have a bit more of a cap on them because I think their head coach isn't going to give them every kind of edge. And that doesn't mean you can't win a championship with that guy. The Rams won a Super Bowl with Sean McVay when he's a total coward and won't go for it at all. But, right. You know, it makes it a lot harder.
Andy, for that matter, isn't super aggressive in
as you and I talked about, yeah, at the end of the Super Bowl, not going for taking one more shot into the end zone there, could have, that was insane. But yeah, anyway, so I'm not like out on Sirianni in the level of that. I think the team's going to be a disaster next year. I don't think that as much. I do think they're going to be good, but I am highly skeptical he's going to give them the edge to ever be the championship team.
Okay. Nick's press conference. He got asked a few questions. First of all, Nick was like not very revealing about anything. Like that was a tough press conference to have to. First of all, let me just take a step back. Here's what happens at the NFL.
Yeah, set the scene. You're there in Florida.
Yeah. So here's what happens. Monday, the first event that happens at the NFL owners meetings on Monday is Monday morning, 7:45. The AFC coaches talk. Okay, so they're all at these round tables in this big conference room, and you know there's like 7-8 chairs at each table. The Philadelphia table is always this. We're talking about AFC here, but just to set the scene for the Eagles table. The Eagles table is always overflowing with us. We always have way more writers there than any other team in the NFL. You look at other tables and there's like 4 empty chairs, and you're like, come on, that's not fair. But anyway. That's the first thing that AFC coaches, I don't have much use for that personally. You know, Robert Saleh got asked about, you know, Bryce Huff, Shane Steichen got asked some questions from Eagles reporters, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, no, we don't really care that much about that. Monday night. Oh, so sorry. Also, Howie talks to us typically on Monday as well. So
that's Howie. And that doesn't get streamed, unlike the Nick and Littery things. That's just the people who are he's talking to
that are there. Yeah. And Monday night, there's a huge party where it's an open bar. There's like buffet style food. Food's ridiculous. Like,
what did you have? Bar.
I actually didn't have any food. I had a huge lunch. I just wasn't hungry. So I didn't really have anything at all.
What do you eat for lunch?
I had a big burger and a giant plate of fries.
From where? Like down.
What's that?
There?
Yeah, actually at the, at the hotel that it was at. So it's two hotels. It's JD Marriott there and the Ritz-Carlton. They're connected. And it's just a huge place. Anyway, at this party, you know, I've gotten wrecked at that party before. So my plan was to go in and just have like four or five beers. And yeah, to be clear, four or five beers would, you know, do some damage to a lot of people. I weigh like 215. Okay. I can handle four or five beers, but that was the plan going in. But these NFL people, they had an old fashioned bar. They had a bar dedicated to just making old fashions. And it's like, come on.
Wow.
So now my hands are tied. I have to have a bunch of those. Like, there's no other way. You're going to have an old fashioned bar. I'm going to have some old fashions. Like, there's just no way around it. So the NFC roundtable thing is always on Tuesday. It's just not fair that they don't ever switch it up. They never have the NFL on Monday when everyone's fresh. It's always the day after that party. It's always 7:45, and it's and you're competing against like 14, you know, other Eagles beat writers who are getting there sometimes at like 6:30, like more than an hour in advance to get a chair to make sure they have somewhere to sit, and like so you got to get there really early, super hungover, and then that's when you get Nick. And Nick, I won't say Nick, but a lot of the head coaches even at this thing, hungover as well, don't really want to be there, aren't super enthused about.
Why do they schedule it like this?
It's crazy that they schedule this. Also, like, if you're going to have this party, maybe you don't have the event at 7:45.
That's what I mean. Like, they can't push that back at all. Like,
can't
really?
We have you can't it do at that? 10, you know, right. 11. It's so annoying how they have this set up every year in what is otherwise by far the best offseason event of the year.
That's so silly. It's like, oh, we have to do it this way. Do you really? You can't adjust it.
So Nick talks at 7:45. Yeah, I wouldn't say everyone, but most of the people there have, you know, have imbibed a little bit the previous night and a little sluggish. Of course, that's when the infamous sausage sandwich incident of I believe that was 2017.
Yeah, that was a Doug year.
It was a Doug year for sure, where I had made a sausage sandwich. It was just a bagel and a couple of sausage links in the middle. And Les and McLean, and I think somebody else had taken pictures of me either eating my sausage sandwich or staring at it, sitting right next to Doug. But anyway, Nick wasn't too revealing in his press conference. I thought, you know, I don't even think it's interesting because I just don't think he was trying to be helpful, really, was, you know, the offensive line stuff where he mentioned, you know, we'll see what we do at center. We'll see what happens at right guard. I was like, wait a second. We'll see what you do at center. Cam Jurgens, is he like not definitively the center? And he wouldn't even like acknowledge, like, come on, man. Like, of course Cam Jurgens is going to be the center. And then at right guard.
Yeah, a little ridiculous.
I think Zach asked him more of just an open-ended question on, you know, who was in the mix there. And he named some guys, but didn't name Tyler Steen. So we were like, what? And then Jeff came in late and said, what about Steen? And then he was like, oops, I don't know if the oops, I forgot to add him in there. Didn't mean to think, I don't want him to think that he's not part of that mix. So please add him in. please. I don't remember if that was actually during the press conference or immediately after it, but he didn't mention him initially when he mentioned the options.
I don't think that's irrelevant. That might not be intentional, but it might not be irrelevant.
Right, right. So, like, whereas, you know, you and I can look at center, we know Cam Jurgens is going to start. We can't look at right guard and say we know that Tyler Steen is going to start. So, in my mind, they don't know who their right guard is going to be. They don't, and to me, I feel like that guy isn't on the team yet. Whether they take a right tackle of the future slash right guard of the present, or whether they just, you look at like their top 30 visits, like guys that have come in on like that they get an in-person in-house look at draft prospects that visit the Eagles NovaCare Complex facilities. A couple of those guys have been guys that play guard only and don't have much versatility otherwise. So I don't think it's out of the question that they just draft a guard. I don't think they do that in the first round, but I think there's like a handful of guys that make sense to do that in, you know, rounds two or three or whatever. Maybe they do that and they just have a plug and play starter rookie that they just draft. They just take a guard and they plug them right in at right guard.
I mean, I've been saying this all along, like, and I know you agree with me in terms of he's good there. Tyler Steen to me is a tackle. He's not a guard. Like at least he was so good at tackle. I thought he looked so good. And you know, it's training camp, it's a small sample size, but the stark contrast between how he struggled at guard and basically never even made it a competition with Cam Jurgens, and the way he looked like noticeably awesome, which also isn't, I feel like, easy always for an offensive lineman to do in a practice at all, let alone a rookie doing that. Like, I wasn't even watching Tyler Steen at certain times, and he popped out to me because he looked so good on the move. He looked so natural, such a natural mover, if you will, at left tackle, that I was like, what? Just play that guy there. It's a more valuable position anyway. And also, you don't have like a surefire swing tackle at this point, right? Especially behind Jordan. I mean, you know, could be Fred Johnson, maybe, but like, you know, we haven't really seen a lot of him in real game action. So, yeah, I would like to see Steen more, honestly, at tackle, and I think he could have a bright future there. But that does beg the question, who's going to play at right guard? And, yeah, I do think, I mean, I would say non-zero chance Steen's in the mix there or whatever, but certainly not just, like you said, being handed to him.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have mentioned quite a bit. This is the 65th overall pick in the draft last year. So, really, I mean, just outside the second round. And if he's a backup in year two, you know, that's not a great return. That's a great early return anyway. We'll see what he develops into as his career goes along, but not a great early return so far on him, you'd have to say. But yeah, interesting that there will be at least competition, theoretically, at that right guard spot for the second straight year in Eagles training camp. I don't really have much more to add on the offensive line, but another thing I wanted to touch on too was Lurie talking about the demeanors both of Nick and Jalen Hurts, which the Jalen Hurts, I think, was stuff was a little more relevant. And then also a kind of a bigger story near like the, I guess after the season had ended, where I feel like it was stories by McManus and McLean both put out stuff about how he's, like his stoicism was kind of viewed by some as maybe a negative. Well, Lurie kind of touched on that. Where were you going to say something? You can jump in.
Well, we had Joe, you know, Joe Santiliquido did that story for BGN that touched on some of that in terms. I think some it comes off as aloof, you know, to some.
Yeah.
And my point in that has been that because a lot of the pushback is like, well, you can't like how he was last year and hate how he was this year. And I don't agree with that. I'm not saying he needs to change entirely. But I'm saying like different situations might call for a different approach sometime. And it's not a one size fits all. That would be my argument to that.
Yeah. So Lurie basically, and I think Lurie's right in his messaging here where he said, you know, you can't be inauthentic. If you're just not, if your personality is not to, you know, be super outgoing and like, you can't fake it because your team, he didn't say this part, but this is me interjecting. Your teammates are going to like, they're going to identify that in half a heartbeat, and they're just not going to respect you as an authentic person. So, you know, if he's quiet and he's reserved and he's, and you know, that's just kind of the way he's going to lead. It is what it is. Now, whether your preference would be to have a franchise quarterback who is, you know, more exuberant, more outgoing, you know, can kind of, you know, connect with, you know, players all over the roster, offense, defense, whatever it may be, and, you know, lead that way. I think that's probably maybe preferred, but you can't force it. He, you know, like he just is what he's going to be, and you let him do it. Like, you, and Lurie made the point, like, and this is actually kind of true. Like, I feel like this is kind of like a thing that you say that it's, you know, you're just kind of making something up that, that wasn't really said at the time. But I actually think this is right. When they were like 10-1, there was kind of a narrative that like, oh, they're winning because they're winning all these close games because Jalen Hurts is calm, steady hand, and, you know, his stoic nature, and he's nothing either. He's unflappable, like nothing, right. Like nothing, you know, mentally can stop him, and blah, 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 blah. And that's kind of true. Like, I did hear stuff like that at that time. Mm-hmm. And then they have that losing streak at the end of the year, and it's like, he's too stoic, you know? So like, you know, I kind of get his point on that,
sure.
But I think his greater point that you can't change who somebody is and expect it to work. And he said the same thing kind of for Nick, but in the opposite way, where Nick has this huge personality and is extremely demonstrative on the sideline and in the locker room. We saw him like getting into screaming matches at some point with players, you know, down the stretch. At the end of the year, Hassan Reddick being one. I forget who the others were. But, you know, he was asked whether you want him to kind of dial it back a little bit. And he actually said a little bit, like, you know, he needs to kind of find a sweet spot of, you know, being who he is, but also not going over, you know, over the top with that. But again, he went back to the point that you got to let these guys be who they are, or, you know, your teammates and your players who are playing for you around you are just not going to respect the fakeness.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a straw man. I don't think people are asking him to be total Jalen Hurts specifically, to be totally different. I don't think, or at least reasonably. I don't think that's what's reasonably being asked of him. And by the way, not just from a general public, but the Eagles themselves clearly leaking that like they did at the Super Bowl when they said they want Jalen Hurts to be a bit more open and they enjoyed how he was at the Pro Bowl when he looked like he was like having more fun. I do think there are things that Jalen Hurts can tweak in that regard where, yeah, like, I don't think you have to change the calculus of your whole personality, but like maybe look like you're actually having fun out there for once. Like, I don't think that's a big thing to ask for. Or when, like, you know, I think of some moments like when the end of the Seahawks game, why did AJ Brown have to come out and say that Nick Sirianni took the bullet for us? Why couldn't Jalen Hurts after the game say,
very fair, hey guys, for sure,
That was on me. Cause that's like, that's good leadership.
Very
fair. Saying I made the check. I made the call there. I went against the play. That was my bad. I take the blame. Like, why can't he say that? Like, that's what a players typically like to do, even if it's not their fault. They like, that's what a good leader does. You take the accountability, because also at that point, you talk about it for a little bit and then it's gone. Like, but he didn't do that. And then it festered. And then the AJ Brown thing came out like a week after, because it was kind of this like secret thing. Like, why? And then after the season, when Jalen Hurts is asked about, like, do you want Nick Sirianni back? Or I forget exactly what the phrasing was at the time, but basically like a very tepid endorsement of that. So I do think I don't think you have to change Jalen Hurts' personality to expect better of him, expect better leadership of him in those kind of situations. I don't think he was always the leader that he could have been ideally. And that's not me. I feel like being contradictory, because he was, you know, a similar way in 2022. Again, the circumstances were different. They were so good that I think his style worked, because it kind of tempered things down and it made sure they didn't get too ahead of themselves and think they were God's greatest gift to the world and kind of let that run away from them. But when you're going through it and you're going through a tough stretch, again, maybe there's an adjustment that kind of needs to be made there. And I think truly the great players, and obviously let me qualify this with what happens on the field matters most. How he actually plays matters way more. But when a team's going through a stretch like that, I think, you know, the best of the best kind of find a way to break that and like don't let that slide kind of happen. They put the team on their back, I think, not only on the field, but also kind of an attitude and spirit. I think of, and now this is like an all-time kind of leader example to kind of compare to in a different person, but like I feel like that kind of slide doesn't happen last year, let's say, if Malcolm Jenkins is in that locker room. Like, yep. I don't think he would stand for that. He just wouldn't. And maybe they're lose. Obviously, again, talent is part of it. But just the mentality, I think
it looks different. Even if they continue to lose, it just looks, it looks exactly a little bit different. Yeah.
I don't think they look as lifeless as they did by the end of the season. So, and that's, you know, again, that's a lot to ask for Jalen Hurts to be Malcolm Jenkins, but I think there's a bridge to gap from what he was last year and Malcolm Jenkins. And I think he could get a little bit closer to that. And I think that's what kind of people are asking for. They're not asking for a total personality reshape and for him to yell at everyone. But I do think he kind of needs to step it up a little bit, just like he needs to get better at whatever, like, you know, accuracy, you know, as part of his game. It's all part of the equation here. I think there's room to improve. And I think that's a fair criticism and fair to point out he could be better in that regard.
Okay. Well said. Couple throwaway things, not throwaway things, but just the smaller things. Lurie and the Eagles were, I mean, not Lurie, but the Eagles in the NFL PA player poll, which is very fun to read if you've ever seen that, where basically the players rate all the teams in terms of like a lot of different categories, like, you know, do they like their head coach? Do they like the treatment of their families? Do they like how the team, you know, like the travel? Do they like the team's facilities, et cetera, et cetera? They're graded on like 8 or 9 different categories, something like that. The Eagles finished 14th overall in that a year ago. This year, 4th, moved up 10 spots, 4th in the league. Pretty good. And one of the areas where they scored very poorly last year was travel, which they got a D from the teams, from their players. And I guess it was because they don't allow players in first class. And the reason they do that evidently is because they don't want to pick players who deserve to be in first class. And then the others that don't, which I understand. So what do they do? And they actually still only got a C. Like they only moved up a letter grade in this category. So like, but I think what they did was they tried to saw criticism. And they tried to make it better, which I think is a legit thing. But so what they did was they now charter 2 planes so that all the players, I mean, nobody gets to sit in first class because, again, they don't want to have to make some players feel like they're less important than other players. But they now have 2 planes and now guys get the row entirely to themselves. Not bad. I'd like to have my own row.
A whole row sounds amazing to me.
Right? So that's pretty good. And I kind of credit them for, and you know, I don't know that these kinds of things lead to wins, you know, more wins or whatever. But I think when, you know, you're pitching a player in free agency to come play for you, it's a point that you can make. You can be like, yo, dude, we're like 4th in the NFL in player happiness.
Sure.
They can point to improvements that they make and blah, 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 whatever. Whereas, you look at a team like the Commanders that finished last in the NFL a season ago, and then they finished last again this year. They signed a lot of guys this offseason, but they also signed a lot of guys for a lot more money than they probably should have made this offseason. So I don't know. I think that they do a very good job of Lurie particularly does a very good job of trying to make his organization, I'll use his words, as top notch in every area as possible. And I think he means that. And you know, sometimes those little things do matter. Sometimes, like if you're competing with the Commanders, for example, for a free agent, and all things being equal, you're probably going to go to Philly instead of Washington. You know what I mean?
I have a question for you, but we'll get to that on the other side of the break here, we'll take right now after you send us to break.
Back after this.
Back here on BGN Radio, which, in addition to Right to Sell and Craft Turkey and Wrong Crowd Beer Company, it's also brought to you by Christian Roach of Roach Realtors. If you're looking to buy, sell, or rent a house, what do you do, Jimmy?
856-906-9295 is where you can reach her to buy or sell your home. Spring market coming up. Actually, probably already started.
Spring has sprung.
Spring has sprung. Yeah, when did spring? When was spring? Was that March 19th?
I think a week or so ago.
Yeah, but that's when a lot of houses start popping up on the market. So if you're just curious, even like what your house would be, could sell for, you can do like market analysis of your house, show you home comps, like home other sales of similar homes like yours in your neighborhood or area or whatever, and give you an idea of what your house would sell for if you put it up on the market. Etc. etc. No charge for that. So anyway, reach out to her, 856-906-9295.
So my question for you, Jimmy, that I teased before the break, which is kind of funny. It's not like a radio show, an actual radio show, you know, live, where it's like, oh, I have to stay tuned. I have to stay through the ads after the break. You can kind of just skip through. But
yeah,
nevertheless, did it. And it's a genuine question. Because I asked this to RJ on the mixtape this week, and I wanted to get your take on it. Like, how would you rank the NFC East owners from best to worst?
Lurie is clearly number one to me.
Agree.
Jerry Jones.
Wow.
Although he's
rough offseason for him.
It's been a really rough offseason for him. But I think, you know, body of work, sure, I'd still probably take him.
That's fair.
The two others stink.
Yeah, John, but you have to do it.
Harris is bad too. I'm gonna go Josh Harris, and then
I think that's fair.
And then John Mara.
RJ put Mara one. I was like, what are you talking about? Because I think he got caught up in he likes Mara, how honest Mara was. Remember that video of like how that Mara kind of had a season or so ago, where it was like, we sucked. Like, he was brutally honest about where the Giants were. So I think he liked that a lot. But yeah, insane ranking to have him number one.
How about pay your players? You know, how about spending some cash and maybe kicking the can down the road, at least? Like, how they let Xavier McKinney just leave,
right,
is insanity to me.
Yeah,
they don't have any good players. You're gonna let like one good player you have let out the door,
right?
You can tag him for $17 million.
Yeah, they could have done the transition tag at the very least, and let, you know, like, have an opportunity to match it, right?
Pay it up front, and then, you know, kick the can down the road on the cap on that. Insane that I mean, it's because of the owner. The owner's gonna put up cash up front.
I think it's also part because I think some of the struggles with that organization has been the co-ownership too. You know, the Tisch family as well. You know, I think that's a dynamic a lot of the teams have, where they have the two owners.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes there are conflicting visions of what they want. So I think there's like compromises that get made there, but then you don't have a cohesive vision. And I think that's actually been a big issue with the Giants, especially I remember with like the Eli stuff. So if I'm not mistaken, like, one of the owners kind of wanted to move on from him, and the other one was like really nostalgic and didn't want to.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of created like, you know, a rift there. So so it's not even just Mara. It's, I think that the both of them, that structure, I just don't like at all. So yeah, they're definitely.
What's your order?
I said Harris number two, in part because Jerry Jones has had a really bad offseason, and we can set our watches to the Cowboys being disappointing every year.
Yeah.
So I know they've had, you know, like regular season success, and also not because I think Harris is great, but I think because he's like kind of unsullied, you know what I mean? He hasn't proven to be awful yet. I'm just going to give him the upside. And like, you know, look, do I think he's been the perfect Sixers owner? No. Has he done some good things? Sure. He hasn't been an F minus Sixers owner. He has not been an A plus Sixers owner. But he has done some positive things. And I think I like the Commanders' trajectory. I don't love it, but I like it more than I dislike it so far. But yeah, it's not so much about an endorsement of him as an indictment of the others behind him. And I think Lurie is at number one. I think I had some other potpourri of topics before you get to anything else you want to. We should mention real quick, the Eagles actually made some signings last week when we didn't record.
Yeah.
We did a double episode last week. We did two hours. Tyler Hall, they added. Kind of unceremoniously, he played for the Raiders. He has experience in the slot. And the way, was it how he talked about him? I saw some of the comments on him. Kind of seemed like not a non-factor.
Yeah. He'll come in and compete for a backup slot corner job. They don't have their starting slot corner on their roster right now, whoever that's going to be.
Right.
It's not going to be Tyler Hall. Like, Tyler Hall will compete for a backup slot job. And it's just like, so they felt like they didn't have enough in reserve at that spot last year. And certainly they didn't. And to be fair, like, they lost their backup before they lost their starter. Like, they lost Zach McPherson during training camp.
Yeah. They lost their top two options there.
And, you know, thereafter they just didn't have success filling that in with anyone.
And they tried. They tried a lot.
They did. They tried like six different guys. So and none of them worked. And
some of them got hurt.
Right. So tough season in the slot. Mm-hmm. And then of course opposing teams are just putting their best receiver in the slot and then wrecking them over in the middle. So that's an area. It's seemingly an area of focus for them this offseason, but they haven't done anything there yet aside from cut their starting corner, which, you know, is a no-brainer decision to cut Avante Maddox for what he was making. But they add Tyler Hall. So he's just going to be another guy in the mix to potentially win a roster spot for a backup slot corner job, but I don't think he's a candidate to start. And I don't necessarily think that he's a lock to make the 53-man roster or anything like that. But, you know, a player that they added.
Hopefully, I think, you know, ideal, realistic, best case scenario is he's like a better version of Josiah Scott. Like a guy, if he has to come in and play, he won't be like a guy the team literally goes after every single play. And it's like, oh, he's just kind of like decent and he's fine.
Right.
They also signed Paris Campbell, who obviously has a connection to the Eagles in terms of being between him and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside when the Eagles made that pick in 2019. And then also the connection to having success in Indy. Well, relatively speaking, at the end there more so. And obviously an appeal there. And also has kick returning experience, which is relevant, as you mentioned earlier in the show, with the NFL's new kickoff, which I'm a fan of. I'm in favor of that. That was something when I watched some XFL games when they were on that I liked. I thought was like entertaining and intriguing. Yeah. So I'm a fan of that. I like a kick return. Bring back my boy Jason Huntley, who was an awesome kick returner in college, and I stand for a long time. His value has never been higher than it has been right now in terms of having some kind of future. I don't know where he's at, but anything that you make out of Paris Campbell.
Isaiah Rogers, by the way, was a good returner also for Indy in 2022. Actually, it's his entire career there. He's their primary kick returner there, and he's good. Yeah. He had one.
I love a touchdown. DB kick returner or a punt returner. I just love that for some. I just think it's great.
He had a high average all 3 years, I think, that he was there. So he could be in the mix for that too. Paris Campbell, by the way, he had the one decent season, like 60 catches, 600 something yards in Indy. He's a guy that ran a 4.31 and his career yards per catch, I don't remember. I think it's 9.2. It's 9 something. I think it was 9. It's career yards per catch, 9.2 for a guy that runs a 4.31 to have an average yards per catch of 9.2. Like, I don't know. You see that all that much, like, for the speed that he has and just the over his career, just the lack of down the field plays that he's made. Kind of wild. And then last year with the Giants, his 1 year there, it was 5 point something. I think 5.1 yards per catch, which is almost impossibly low. And it's not like it was on, like, you know, 4 or 5 catches or something like that. He had 20 something catches and he averaged 5 yards per catch. Insane. How does that happen if you have that much, speed?
Yeah. I mean, the Giants offense was obviously bad, as we know, with the Saquon thing. And, I think the thing with Paris Campbell, the book on him, and, you know, listening to our good friend Johnny Page and Shane Half breaking him down a little bit more on their podcast here on the Shane Page, also on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast network, just like a gadget player, a guy you kind of mix in here and there, you know, not so much, I think, someone who is like your wide receiver 3 definitively, as much as a guy you kind of, although that's kind of how the Eagles have used their wide receiver 3, really. We should also mention here, no more Quez Watkins. He's gone.
All right, Pittsburgh,
Our long national nightmare is over. Andy Weidel, former Eagles executive, reuniting with him in Pittsburgh. Good luck, Steelers. Glad he's not going to be back on the Eagles.
We were just talking about him at the owners' meetings. I forget who I was having this discussion with, but they made a good point where they were like, it might have been Elliott, where he's like, this is the exact kind of player, like, if the Eagles signed him, people would be, like, fired up. Like, always, he runs at 4.3 something. He had, like, decent numbers the 1 year. You can look at, like, a few highlights that he's had over the years, like the long catch and run against the 49ers, like the 91-yard gain, the play against, I think it was the Cardinals, where he took a quick, like bubble screen, took that to the house, had another one against, like, kind of a meaningless game against Dallas.
Well, he had one against the Steelers play in the preseason, too.
Right. So he's had kind of like a few like legit highlight reel moments in the NFL, and you look at those, you go, oh wow. And you kind of imagine that in your offense. I bet that's what Steelers fans are doing right now. Little do they know that like 90% of the time when the ball goes his way, something not good happens.
Right. It's not that he has zero ability at all and can't play.
Probably a good camp. Like, he'll probably go there and have a decent camp, and like people are like, oh, this guy's going to be a factor in offense. And then probably not.
Actually, not in theory. I mean, I don't know what this version of Rush is, and I'm kind of more bullish on him than others, but that part of that's kind of like a bit. In theory, would actually could be a good pair with Russell Wilson, at least the Russell Wilson who used to be able to, you know, hit moon balls. Like, that's like a moon ball, in theory, is what Quez is best at and what Russell Wilson is best at. Yeah. So it's very much in theory, though. It's very much a theoretical proposition more than one based in reality. But yeah, okay. He's also added PJ Mustipher. That kind of seems just like a camp body kind of signing for them. A defensive tackle, more depth on the interior there. Penn State guy. And I think that's it roster wise.
Well, there's one more thing too. So Jeff McLean broke that. Jake Rosenberg, who was long kind of like the not the number two to Howie, like you kind of think like the number two is like the Andy Weidel, Joe Douglas type, but sort of the number two in terms of negotiating contracts and the configuration of contracts and sort of the creative things that they've done cap wise over the years. He's leaving for TBD. Like, we don't know what he's going to be doing next, but he's not going to be with the Eagles anymore. The Eagles do have other guys in house that, you know, have done some creative things. Bryce Johnston is a guy that actually was like a participant in like the Eagles message boards back in the day.
Also, and yeah,
like, was a big EaglesCap.com. And then he created EaglesCap.com, which, by the way, so the way that he structured that site, like, you know how like we're all used to like when we go on overthecap.com. By the way, yep. Is it Spotrac or is it Spotrac? How do you pronounce
rack.
That?
People always get that wrong, or they think it's like Sport Rack, you know, because that's to do with sports, but it's not. It's Spotrac. Spotrac. You know that for sure? I'm looking it up right now, and yes.
Okay, so Spotrac.
Yeah. Spotrac.
The way that they have the grid.
Very confusing.
They have the grid with like, you know, base salary and then, you know, like, I don't know, prorated bonus money, you know, the cap, the salary, the actual salary cap number for that year, you know, what it'll cost to, you know, cut a guy, cap savings, like the way they have those grids set up. Bryce had that first. Bryce set that up on Eagles cap way back in the day.
I mean,
we're talking like 2010. He had that kind of stuff.
I think even earlier than that, honestly.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about like 2008.
And Over the Cap does a tremendous job. Like, so like, I don't, you know, Jason at Over the Cap is like amazing at, you know, keeping that website going and whatever. But basically they borrowed sort of like the same visual format that Bryce put together that just handled just covered the Eagles cap. And that was like a serious resource for, you know, people covering the Eagles back in the day. And then, you know, Over the Cap and Spotrac have become sort of, you know, like almost, it would be devastating if suddenly they were both gone.
No one would know. Yeah, no one would know anything.
Yeah. So Bryce was kind of a pioneer in what those two sites have become. And I imagine he'll kind of become the top guy in terms of contract configuration. I don't know about negotiation. I just don't know. But he's going to step up into a bigger role, I'm sure, with Jake Rosenberg leaving. Jake Rosenberg, by the way, I got to know him a little bit over the years. Mm-hmm. Great guy. Gonna you know, miss seeing him. Particularly, like, he always on road games. Like home games, they don't sit like in the press box. But road games, they sit in the he's normally sitting right behind me on road games. And you know, the opposing press boxes rather. So, you know, I've gotten to know him over the years a little bit, and bummer to see him go.
I think definitely a significant loss. I don't want to downplay it. At the same time, this is someone who Howie Roseman has been very close with for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've had the relationship.
Childhood boys.
Right. So I'm sure it's not like a blindside. It's not like they woke up today and it's like, oh, by the way, Jake Rosenberg's leaving. Like, they've had time, you know, I'm sure these conversations have happened over time where they've had, you know, a chance to kind of prepare for this. That doesn't mean, again, his loss won't be felt or whatever, but it just means it's not like they're getting caught off guard and suddenly like, oh no, we have no idea how to manage the cap now. Like, you know, I think that's a little extreme to expect that, but I do think anytime you're losing a bright front office member, it's obviously not ideal, and it's something the Eagles have had to deal with in recent years in terms of a brain drain. And Lurie has made it a point in the past to credit Howie Roseman with being able to kind of restock that pipeline constantly and have good other executives kind of filling those roles. So, and I think, as you mentioned, Bryce seems like someone who probably will take on at least some of that responsibility and will be valuable in that regard. So, significant loss, but also credit to the Eagles who have been able to kind of, I think, weather these kind of things.
Anything well, that's all I have, buddy.
Well, that means you have to give me a final thought.
Yeah. Like I said, owner.
So I guess that we didn't mention Hassan Reich. I think right. That is something mm-hmm. we should say before you get to that, actually.
Yeah. There was basically, you know, I mean, they all got at, I mean, even Jeffrey got asked about Hassan Reich. Nick mm-hmm. did and how he did, and just totally unrevealing about any of that. Basically, mm-hmm. he's under contract. Not going to say much more than that. It was kind of the messaging, unless you took something away else.
No, I just, it seems that there was, based on the chatter and everything, I think ESPN's Jeremy Fowler was saying that, like, you know, it's just kind of an inevitability. And I just think that's, as I've said all along, I just think that's wrong. I just don't think that's great. I don't think that's, if you're trying to win a Super Bowl this year, you're a worse team if Hassan Reddick isn't on your team. So,
Derek Gunn had that report, by the way, that said he would yes. play on his current deal.
Well, if he does, yeah. Was that so much about Hassan Reddick's attitude or the way this is? So this is the tweet you're referring to from our good friend Derek Gunn, who said Eagles are still deciding what to do about the Hassan Reddick situation. He still wants more money than the Eagles are willing to pay. As of now, if he were to return to the Eagles, he would play for what his contract currently states. So you're interpreting it as
Reddick right.
being on board. I meant it. I took it as like the Eagles aren't touching this contract. So
yeah, right. Okay. That could be. I probably just misread that. Right. Though, I mean, the way technically it's worded, that's, I could interpret it that way, but I think what Derek probably meant was that he would have to
want him back.
He would have to return on his, and I mean, really, like the way that the NFL is set up from the last collective bargaining agreement, you can't hold out anymore because it just costs so much. You can't hold out in game.
Exactly.
Chris Jones did it last year, but that's a guy that knows full effing well that he's going to break the bank at some point. So who cares? Like, you know, and
he also said he regretted that, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
but Hassan Reddick isn't on that level. Like I've said plenty of times over the last few podcasts and like over the last couple of years, like he's the best player in the NFL, arguably in that 2022 season, if you include the playoffs. Like he led the NFL in sacks and forced fumbles, if you include the playoffs. And the guys that like that were even close to him played the same number of games. Like we're also like, you know, deep like Nick Bosa, for example, mm-hmm. played the same number of playoff games as Hassan Reddick, and Hassan Reddick had him beaten, you know, all those major categories. So I don't know. He, for whatever reason, just doesn't have the same. The NFL teams around the league aren't valuing him the way that mm-hmm. he probably rightfully values himself. For whatever reason, I don't know what that reason is, but I don't know. I mean, he had a down year, obviously, this past year, and there are questions about the way that he maybe played for stats, but. I don't know, man.
Yeah, but then you signed Bryce Huff, who can't defend the run or the book on him.
He's an amazing edge rusher, and I'm talking about Hassan Reddick here. He does the most important thing on defense that you can ask for at an extremely high level. I'm surprised that his market
objectively better than almost every other player.
I mean, it's weird that he's not getting, seemingly isn't getting, you know, that kind of respect. Locally and around the league.
What's the lowest you would trade him for?
Two. So if it were like a three and something,
mm-hmm.
a three and like, a five, no. Like a three and a three, maybe.
That's so weak, though. I feel he has to be a high weak. Three.
But again, you're saying like, what's the lowest I would trade him for?
Yeah.
But like, I mean, if I know that he's like, there's, okay, so at this point, to be clear, is what I would, the lowest I would trade him for. At this point, knowing that his market isn't as good as we probably would have thought it would be. And then also with all the moves that they've already made, where you have Bryce Huff and you have Josh White and you have Brandon Graham, you have Nolan Smith and you have Zach Bond and whatever, right down the line. If you asked me this before any of that, like all transpired, I'd say like a low one, you know, like a high, like a really high right. two is what I would, you know, would be the lowest that I trade him for. But now that things have kind of already happened and you've already like his trade value isn't as high seemingly as we would think, and they've already made all these other moves, you know, recalibrated, probably a couple of threes is the lowest I would trade him for, but I'd be certainly gunning for a lot higher than that.
I feel like if they trade him, that's just not going to be acceptable in terms of a sell too. And how do you sell this to fans? And that's not their number one priority, but I think mm-hmm. that is part of the equation. And I think that's not something that Howie Roseman doesn't think about at all, knowing him and knowing, you know, he's, you know, aware of how he's perceived and how his moves are perceived. So I feel like it would have to be something that kind of creates some kind of positive buzz on the return. Mm-hmm. And I think that's either like getting a player back who you can kind of be like, well, this is like, you know, a good player that we got back, or maybe pick in a player, or although I think the player you're getting at that point's not great. Or if there's like a way to kind of package some kind of picks that you already have, like if you could take Reddick, and this is just a thought experiment. I looked this up. If you took Reddick and 50, Eagles second round pick they got from the Saints. Mm-hmm. And let's say, you know, what if the Ravens want to add another pass rusher? They just lost Jadeveon Clowney to the Panthers. What if they trade for him at 30? And I don't know if the Eagles want to get there at the end of the first round. The value from that is worth a third round pick, a late third round pick specifically. So it's not mm-hmm. even a great return still at that point. But so that's like, that kind of is like making it work where it's not the return that you want it to be. It's the return that's kind of might be what it has to be realistically, not great, but you sell it as like, hey, we got an extra first round pick, even though it's not like a true first round pick value because of the swap you gave.
We now have the fifth round option that we can use on that down the line.
Yeah, and the talent pool you're picking from is in theory, you know, like way better. And you could get someone potentially who falls like Nolan Smith did last year.
Right.
And, you know, it hasn't worked out yet. But so I think it would have to be kind of something like
that. I think player for player thing is probably the thing that they could would be the easiest thing for. Like, let's say they traded him for him and a pick, for example, like not a high pick, but him and mm-hmm. a pick for L'Jarius Sneed. Like,
right.
That's something that they could sell with
Hendricks. Yeah, not going to happen now. Titans, but right. Of course, Sneed something like that.
But where do you go again?
The Titans.
Titans. Okay. Yeah.
A little surprising. Like he went so low. I feel like obviously the contract was big. Yeah.
Yeah.
The contract is ultimately, you know, a very big contract, but the acquisition cost not incredibly high. So I just think they have to play hardball with Reddick. I really do. They did it with Ertz, who they, you know, was more of like, you know, a franchise, you know, mm-hmm. had more cachet, I'd say in the franchise and everything. So like
helped win him a Super Bowl.
Yeah. I caught the game winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. So I think they have to play hardball with Reddick. I think they, and honestly, I don't know that it would really make sense to trade Reddick at the deadline, but I think there's, you know, shout out to, the PHLY show has talked about this too. Like when you look at the deals that have gotten the best value, it's been at the deadline as opposed to right now, where there seems to be this very like soft, I just mentioned it with Sneed. We mentioned it with Brian Burns in the past and how that wasn't a good precedent for the Reddick situation. Mm-hmm. I think the market's too soft. It's not worth it. But there could be a situation maybe that arises, like just like it was not certainly comparable with Ertz, because they probably could have gotten more if they traded him in the offseason as opposed to when they did, because they kind of hung on for him a little too long there. But I think maybe in theory, your best shot at getting the best value for him could be at the trade deadline. Although I just would not trade him. I would hold on to him. I'd play hardball. Like you said, what's he going to do? Hold out? Okay. He's going to come back eventually. Or if he sits out the whole year, then I think that's worth it. I think that's worth. I'd rather take the risk that he might come back than if he sits out the whole year. I'll live with that. Is what I'm trying to say. If that's really what he wants to do,
nobody's ever going
to
do that again after what happened to.
Exactly, it's not going to happen.
Who was that? The running back.
On the Steelers.
How am I forgetting his name?
Who Le'Veon Bell? Le'Veon yeah, Bell. So. I'm saying if that's the worst case scenario, if that happens, then I live with that. I say that's fine. It was worth it to play hardball with him and try to get him to come back. So I just don't think there's a way that you trade him for a third round pick and that's like a good move for a team trying to win a Super Bowl this year. I just don't think that's smart.
Yeah. On the trade deadline point, the other part of the year where you can get a good return is right before the season too, where especially if a team like loses a guy in training camp or preseason game or something mm-hmm. like that, gets hurt, like Sam Bradford, for example. I mean, the trade that the Eagles pulled off for him is kind of legendary. You know, big time team, a Super Bowl contender. Obviously, they probably wouldn't trade with an NFC Super Bowl contender, but let's say an AFC team has some major injury. Yeah, design Reddick to them, and you probably get a better return than you might now.
And Reddick could do a hold in, you know, where like he shows up to camp, but he's not really practicing as a fake injury, and he kind of just stash him away like that a little bit. And I think that's all worth it to me. Trying to make it work is worth it to me. Trading him for a meager return is just not even close to being worth it.
He's a pretty like my interactions with Hassan Reddick, smart guy, like really nice guy.
Yeah.
is not authentic, candid. Never struck me as like any kind of like, you know, difficult personality to deal with, like,
or
never
delusional.
Struck me that way ever. And, you know, so I think he could possibly be reasonable about it too. He can have a sit down with the team,
mm-hmm.
like try to play ball with us. We're trying to get you paid and also, you know, on a team that you can be happy. But that's going to be impossible if the situation turns ugly and, you know, we're not just going to give you away for nothing. So if it does get ugly, then it probably means that, you know, you won't go anywhere. So I don't know. He seems like a totally reasonable person, and it's a weird situation because, again, like you, I just keep him because I think he's awesome. I think he's an awesome player and a good guy and
a premium position.
I don't know.
Like, think about how stacked your pass rush is, and there's enough snaps for all those guys, especially coming off a year where they are playing too much.
Yeah.
But like, you're going to have this issue where you played guys too much last year, and then you're going to get rid of one of your top guys. And now you're going to find yourself in the same boat. Like, that's so stupid. Like, none of it makes sense to me. I just don't get it. If you're going to trade someone, it should have been Josh Sweat, and you didn't do that. And I would not trade Hassan Reddick, basically,
all right.
Unless you're getting a beat you over the head pick. Okay.
Yeah.
Or offer. Do you have any final thoughts?
I just love the owners meetings. It's always in a warm location. This year, of course, Orlando, you know, Phoenix, a lot of years it's been in, you know, Palm Beach. One of the real perks of covering the NFL is going to that every year. And it's one of those events that I go to every year and I go, okay. I don't think I take my job for granted, but as a reminder, don't. Because, like, you know, so some of the, they had an old fashioned bar, dude. They had a bar that just made old fashions only.
You're still thinking about this.
And they were good.
You'll always be thinking about this.
So it's just kind of a reminder. You had a pretty good job. Don't screw it up in some horrible way. That's my final thought.
And if you want to get into the industry, Jimmy will give you more than happy to give you advice. And I feel like that's true. I'm not just doing this.
Oh, for sure. So like, people have emailed me before and I'll give them my phone number and I'll have, you know, basically what I just do is I say, hey, I give them my story about how I, you know, got in, and they can take, you know, there are a million different ways to achieve whatever goals you're trying to achieve. All I do is kind of give them my story of how I got in, and whatever takeaways you can take from that, then God bless.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely helped me over the years. I mean, I have my job in no small part to you and your counsel. So yeah.
Oh, thanks,
appreciate
buddy.
That. Well, it's true. I mean, you know, when I was just, but a mere commenter at BGN and fan shotter,
young buck, I remember back in the day.
Well, you advocated for me, and that was important. And then it's over the years too, you've given me good advice, especially when there was a time where, you know, BGN wasn't necessarily going to be able to be a full-time thing, or at least that's my perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I was applying to other things, and you gave some good advice on what to do about that. And I feel like what I did worked. So yeah. Thank you, Jimmy.
You got it, buddy.
My final thought is go Phillies. As you see, if you're watching the YouTube version, I was supposed to go today. They moved.
What time is that, by the way? I totally forgot about that.
3:05 or something like that.
Oh, so it already started.
No, tomorrow. It's, they postponed it. Well, they was, and then the weather, they moved it. So they always, for those who don't know, quote unquote, inside baseball, a little literally here, they always schedule the day off after the opening day in case there's a rain out on the opening day. So they can just move it back, as opposed to, you know, like scheduling it after total do a new thing. So yeah, I'll be going tomorrow. Shout out to my good friend, Matt, former BGN radio host here, our good friend, Matt. He hooked me up with the tickets. So going to opening day to see the Phillies hopefully beat the Braves, who they own. They're in their heads. Love to see it. Really hope
not so much Phillies... in the regular season, but in the playoffs when it matters.
Well, that's when it matters most. Let's get your Phillies. I know some people get mad when we talk baseball, but whatever.
I mean, we're an hour 21 and more than that in the pod.
There's a YouTube commenter at least one every time who's like, no baseball talker. It's just like, you could just like skip that part. It's a podcast.
Yeah.
And also it's like, so we don't talk about it for like 30. It's like a 30 minute segment. Anyway,
just hit the button that says fast forward 30 seconds.
So what's your Phillies prediction? Do you think they win the division, and where do they finish in the playoffs? And if you don't time,
Stolnus,
I can go.
I asked Stolnus a series of questions.
I know. I heard this.
He had them winning the World Series. What's the over-under for them on Wednesday? Is it 91? I think it's 91. I think that's what Stolnus said during that episode. I'll go over on the wins. Mm-hmm.
But do they win the division?
No. I think the Braves will win the division. And I think they get hot again in the playoffs. And I think they lose in the World Series.
Oh, tough. It's hard to reconcile how they lost last year. Like, it's just, it makes no sense, right? Like, it's just like, there's no good reason for them to be up 2-0, have like the best home field advantage in baseball by far, just needing two more wins, and you can't beat the Diamondbacks, who like just weren't good. They weren't not that good of a team. Like, you know, when they lost to the Astros, it was like, okay, that team's like great.
And yeah, they cheat. Yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
The fact that they even made it as close as they did, honestly, was like, impressive, and honestly, like, that's as far as they could have realistically.
Actually, after beating teams like the Braves, like, oh, we'll get this crap team by comparison, we're gonna wipe the floor with them, and then not.
Right. So, yeah, that Phillies run, you know, it was like, okay, they ran into a team that's awesome, but last year, just devastating that they lost to the Diamondbacks. Screw it, I'll take them to win the division. I think they seem to be more, a little bit more like locked in on that. I think,
okay,
that's not everything, it's not just a matter of like caring about it, but I do think it's more of focus because of how out of it they've been in that regard in recent years. Mm-hmm. And because the Braves, from my understanding, have been like such a juggernaut. Like, they were ridiculously good last year. It's like obnoxious. It's like 22 Eagles level of good, where it's like they can't be that good again. They're still probably gonna be really good, but like they can't be that level of good. There's gonna be some natural regression baked in there. And I think the Phillies are gonna benefit from you know, the World Baseball Classic kind of like slowed them down a little bit in terms of the players who were participating in that. Bryce Harper was hurt, obviously, coming into last year, if I'm remembering correctly. So mm-hmm. I think they had things kind of working against them. And I think this is the year they get it done. It's hard to bet against them in the playoffs. Like, they're just built different. Like, when mm-hmm. for those moments, they're clearly built for those moments. So
and the home field advantage is real.
It is real.
Yeah,
it is very real. Having been there, it's very different than like an Eagles game. Those are not the same thing. I'm not trying to crap on Eagles fans here, but I'm saying it is like legitimately different from when I've been. So
very party atmosphere.
Yeah, more intense. I would say more tuned to literally every single moment.
Yeah. I get
at the Phillies games.
Yeah, and party atmosphere when they're winning, of course.
Yes. So. Okay. Yeah. So Phillies win the division. They win the NL East. They win the World Series. Why not? Why not believe? Okay. This has been BGN Radio 387. Check out all of our sponsors in the episode description, our social media handles, all that good stuff. As I said earlier, like on the video on the YouTube page, give us a thumbs up, subscribe, hit the bell notification to get updates when new videos, new podcasts drop here on the YouTube feed. Had an episode of the NFC East mixtape come out earlier this week. You can check that out with me and RJ Ochoa. I mentioned on the same page. We also have the draft position ranking shows going on here. Above the Nest with Ray Shell. A lot of different episodes here that you can all check out on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed. As I've said before, too, we are on the march to 2,000 ratings. So we want to get that. Steal your friend's phone. Leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast. And that'll be very good for us. It'll make us very happy. We're at 1,955. So we're 45 away. Let's get to 2,000 at some point here. And we'll all feel good about that. As I like to say, the podcast is free. So if you do things like that, which don't cost you anything, it helps make us look good and helps the show keep running. So that's it for this episode. We will be back with you next week to really, I guess, kind of get into some of our pre-draft. Things sure. And any Eagles news that comes along.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.